Namaste, greetings. Welcome to Indigenous Insights. I'm your host, Gladys Rowe, and I'm so grateful you are here. Each episode, I sit in conversation with Indigenous evaluation practitioners, leaders, researchers, and scholars who are working in, thinking about, and supporting Indigenous evaluation to share the learning they've experienced along the way. My hope is that these episodes allow you to reflect on how to design, implement, learn from, and support evaluation by, with, and for Indigenous families, communities, organizations, and nations. Join me and my guests as we open up our evaluation bundles to share what we've gathered in our journeys and bring them together into this space. I hope in these stories you will come to understand how we can collectively contribute to decolonial futures and strengthen Indigenous resurgence. Dansé, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. This is Indigenous Insights and Evaluation Podcast. Welcome to the last episode of season one. What a journey this has been. When I started this podcast just over a year ago, I could not have predicted the amazing outpouring of excitement and support that this podcast would garner. I'm blessed and lucky to have been welcomed into this space with such open arms, and I'm so glad that you took this journey through season one along with me. I opened this season by sharing who I am, where I come from, and why I do the work I do. I share the intentional space I hoped that this podcast could be in gathering voices of those who were doing and thinking about Indigenous evaluation, research, and knowledge generation in a way that could inspire and make visible the deeply critical work that they are leading. I did this because I knew, at times, I could feel so alone and challenged in the work that I was doing, and that in community, in collective, and in relationship was where I wanted to turn. These spaces fill me up. During the Making Introductions episode, I shared a bit about what Indigenous evaluation means to me, and I'll share it here again. What is Indigenous evaluation? Indigenous evaluation is about learning about transformation, learning about success, learning about shifts to support healing, wellness, and thriving at individual, organizational, and community levels in a way that is rooted in Indigenous knowledges, protocols, ways of gathering insights, making sense of, and then telling the learning stories. And even further, Indigenous evaluation is ensuring that what is working for Indigenous peoples, organizations, and communities is well-resourced in a way that ensures long-term sustainability that is baked into the way we do things now and each and every day moving forward. Indigenous evaluation requires time. Time to build relationships, to build capacity, to build new foundations, to support inquiries into success, meaning-making, and sharing stories. Indigenous evaluation takes intention to start and maintain the work in a good way, and in a way that's rooted in protocols and ceremony that takes care of the spirit of the work that's in alignment with local knowledges. Indigenous evaluation is subjective. It understands that there are multiple ways of knowing that need to inform the design, knowledge gathering, sense making, and sharing. Indigenous evaluation requires forethought about relational accountability, shared decision making, and data sovereignty and ownership. Indigenous evaluation requires Indigenous peoples supported by knowledge keepers, supported by community, and supported by other Indigenous evaluation practitioners to be leading this work. Indigenous evaluation requires a space for us to learn together, to share insights and challenges, and to support one another, to take up this work for our communities and for the generations to come. So in this final episode, I'm going to do some looking back. I'm going to take a few steps back and walk through the bundles that have been opened, the stories that have been shared, the laughter that we had together, and the tremendously wise and beautiful moments that I experienced with all of my guests in this season. And what better way to mark this transition for the end of season one and into season two, spoiler alert, that we'll actually be focusing on arts and creation in knowledge generation and evaluation processes. What better way to mark this time than with a poem? But before we get there, I want to take that step back. I'm not sure if you know me well, if you've only listened to one episode, have listened to all 21 episodes, or if I've maybe known you all my life and you're along for the ride of this podcast with me. In any of those cases, you may or may not know that poetry has been a significant mechanism for me in my life. I began writing poetry when I was back in middle school. I pulled out a poetry compilation last year that was published through my school district and shared a couple of the poems that I wrote. I believe I was in grade 8 at the time, and poetry has been one of those ways that I've been able to express myself consistently throughout all of life's ups and downs, through all of the transitions, through the hope, through the fear, through the grief, through the love, through every single thing that I've experienced. Poetry has been there for me in this time. In the way that I do my research, in the way that I evaluate, in the way that I show up as my whole self into this space. Poetry comes with me, whether it's present publicly or not. It has been something that's been a consistent tool for self-reflection, self-expression, and for sense-making or meaning-making. In my dissertation work, which I've shared a little bit about on this podcast, I honored the teachings that I gathered in my time sitting with Indigenous birth workers across Turtle Island by reflecting on the wisdom that they offered through my own poetry creation process. I often facilitate group sessions that ask people to think about their experiences, to think about their learning, about their hopes, about their vision, and facilitate poetry creation sessions for those groups to be able to mark the moments in time. And sometimes it comes into my evaluation space as well. And so I'm going to offer a poem at the end of this podcast that's going to witness the journey that I've taken over the past 10 months, sitting in and alongside the stories of the amazing guests that have jumped in both feet with me into this podcast. And first, I want to share a little bit of the work that's been sticking to my bones as I make my way back through the episodes. I like to use that term in thinking about what I carry with me as a result of my time in relationship and conversation with other people, other ideas, other concepts. And so I hope that you might spend this time also reflecting on the same. First, I think of the conversation I had with Marissa Hill in episode 15. That is really sitting with me in the transition from summer to fall and now to the cooler months of winter, when the earth around us in the northern hemisphere slows down and rests. I often think in this time of the teachings of the land and the visual metaphors that Marissa offers of the river, the buffalo, and the butterfly really resonate with me as I move into this time of deep contemplation in the winter months. And so she speaks about the guidance of the buffalo and the beauty of the butterfly and how all of these invite us into, or can invite us into, a space of deep reflection and contemplation about what we need to do to show up in this space in a good way, in the space of Indigenous evaluation, in all of the different roles that we have and the different pathways that we're walking. Marissa invites us to think about how we will show up and asks us to keep showing up, to be committed to doing this work in a good way. In the same episode, Marissa shares that for her, Indigenous evaluation feels like love, and it feels like home. And so I've been thinking a lot through my time in these episodes. I've been thinking a lot about love. In the conversations that I have on this podcast, I usually ask guests to share with me their story and ask them to reflect with me on these questions. What is my story? Why me? Why Indigenous evaluation? Why now? What do I hope for our collective work? And in these stories, they've shared wisdom, fears, hopes, challenges, and calls to action. These conversations have brought me so much joy because I understand the power of story. And I'm nourished through story. Stories are possibilities. They're beacons. They can provide hope and inspiration. Stories help us to learn and make connections, to build relationships, and to counter the us-them dichotomy that serves to uphold colonial systems, white supremacy, and the resulting deep inequities that we encounter in our work within the evaluation ecosystem. And in these stories, I heard so many people share that they were accidental evaluators, that they mostly stepped into this role while on their way to do other things. That might resonate for some of you. And that what called them in and has kept them in this work is love. Love for community, love for something different than what we're seeing in society right now. Love for Indigenous brilliance and joy. And so when I think about what I've gathered from my time with Marissa, with Terilyn, with Larry, Nikki, Carolyn, Kim, Tammy, Annetta, Karen, Jolie, Abigail, January, Sam, Michael, Peter, Paula, Melanie, Vanessa, Melissa, Myra and Danielle, it is this soft, loving, kind feeling of walking alongside someone who understands the experience of what it's like to be an Indigenous evaluation, to be that person who is moving between Indigenous organizations and communities and funders, and then so also at the same time asking funders to walk a different kind of journey, to think about different ways to commit to walking alongside us on that journey. In my conversation with January, I really sat with this overwhelming gap in support for Indigenous peoples to do evaluation in our own communities. That in her work in Alaska, for example, there are so few Indigenous evaluators. How can foundations and institutions step up, and not in a way that is leading or directing the work, but to show up in a way that offers resources to support Indigenous sovereignty in evaluation, research, and other knowledge production activities? In my conversation, one of my very first conversations I had with Dr. Michael Hart in episode 3, we spent a lot of time in the theoretical realm. And I knew that would be an important element for this conversation because Michael is a really influential methodologist when we consider Indigenous research methodologies and their contribution to the development of the field of Indigenous evaluation. We could say they're cousins for sure. I keep going back to the conversation Michael and I had on this episode about the continuum of Indigenous evaluation, how this is being supported or not by the big funders of Indigenous programming and community work, and the locus of control over all aspects of decision-making that is required. So for me, from this episode, this is an area that we need to talk more about. And it also makes me think a little bit about the conversation with Abigail, where she talked about the risk that happens when you step into a space of demanding change, of deconstructing and unlearning and unsettling colonial spaces, and the real and true risk of violence that happens in that space. I started off the season with my conversation with Larry Bremner, and this was a conversation that sparked my confidence that I could actually do this podcasting thing, because to tell you the truth, I really just wung it from the beginning. Is that even a word? I winged it. I wung it. Anyway, this conversation sparked my confidence that I could actually do this for real and affirmed that sitting in conversation and listening to the stories was really an important thing that made my heart so happy. He really reminded me of the beautiful opportunity that we have as evaluators. This truly is beautiful work, and I feel so lucky to be able to walk alongside communities in supporting their priorities for evaluation and thinking about how we can do this evaluation work in ways that are better aligned with community. And he made visible a fundamental question for our work. What will this evaluation mean for the community? And that question just continues to stick with me as I think about the ways that I'm responsible and in relationship with those that I'm working with. And then I move into the conversation that I had with Abigail Echohawk in episode 11, and I think this is one of those other ones that really sits with my spirit. Her voice is the one that reminds me that I have a long way to go in my work, and that even though there are bright lights that allow this to feel like nourishing work, there are also some really serious responsibilities that can't be hidden in what it means to do Indigenous evaluation. And that when we trouble and when we challenge colonial structures, whether they be in research and evaluation, whether they be in health equity and demanding justice for missing and murdered Indigenous women and Two-Spirit peoples, wherever the spaces are, this work brings risk. Challenging the way things have always been done is risky business. And it brings with us the necessity for building and having structures of safety, of having the scaffolds that will hold us in safety and also hold us all accountable. And so that conversation just has me thinking about that big anti-energy that Abigail talks about in calling each other into the accountabilities that we have to one another and to our communities into creating futures that are transformed, and that this is really hard work. And to show up consistently requires us to take care of ourselves and to take care of one another. And in holding that accountability front and center, it reminds me of the conversation with Dr. Kim Vanderwerd in episode 12, where a young person in the audience during a presentation asks her, maybe we're measuring the wrong things. So how are we accountable to measuring the things that matter to our communities, to measuring the things that will disrupt the status quo? The heart of this work is critical to remember. And in so many episodes, this heart work shines through. Which reminds me of the conversation with Tara Lynn in episodes 8 and 9 that gets right to the heart and spirit of the work, rooted in the Mi'kmaq language and in the rematriation of knowledge searching. And after I had this conversation with Tara Lynn, I was invited to attend an in-person gathering in Circle with Nikki, Kim, and Tara Lynn, and so many other amazing women around the sacred fire. It was a transformational space where I only caught a glimpse of the vision that Tara Lynn carries at the Turtle Island Institute, and it was such a gift to learn in that space. Land-based work and the teachings from land really came through and stays with me from so many of the episodes, and one that stands out in particular for me is episode 4 with Tammy Mudge. Her work at Everyone Every Day at Halifax is rooted in community and demonstrates how to show up and be responsible for the choices that we make for accountability to community. And so many of the stories that she shared are rooted in the teachings of the land. Again, connected to land, so many of the conversations that I've had were just so beautiful. And some of the images that brought the heart and spirit of Indigenous evaluation into this space were through those stories about land. And in the conversation with Dr. Myra Parker and Dr. Danielle Eakins in episode 18, Myra shared a story from Coeur d'Alene elders about the Huckleberry Gathering and the assessment of the viability of expending community resources on this activity. And the assessment of an evaluation that went into this process through the story that is shared about the youth going up the mountain. For me, this really sits at the center that Indigenous peoples have always been evaluators and researchers in ways that have really been less visible from a Euro-Western perspective. And this brings me into the space I shared with Dr. Karen Alexander in episode 20. Karen reminds me of the centrality of the values and worldviews of Indigenous nations and the importance of starting from this framework for leading evaluation work and how the values that lead this work help a larger society to learn about who we are as Indigenous peoples. And in thinking about the values that lead us into this work, it stitches together with the conversation I had with Dr. Mel in episode 10. And she really offers me and the listeners the opportunity and the invitation to listen to our guts, to listen to our intuition, to listen to those knowledges that sit within the wisdom and experiences that we carry. And that the work we do is really values-based. It is rooted in how we can show up to do this work in a good way with communities. And the stories that were shared in that conversation really illustrated and inspired stepping into those ways. In the final episode, I had the space to talk with Sam Bird, who is the host of Young People Know. And this was a bit of a divergence from the previous episodes, as Sam isn't an evaluator, but her work with Indigenous youth offers so much direction on one of the elements of Indigenous evaluation, how we do this work in a good way, and how we resource this work for meaningful participation of community. So when we think about engaging Indigenous youth or other members in an advisory capacity, how can we support the valuable contributions they make so that they can show up in a way that honors their wisdom? There are so many bright spots from this conversation and from her podcast. I could go on for so much longer about the interconnections and learnings that I've made as a result of the gifts and insights that each guest shared with me, and I'm sure you have your own. As I go back through and listen again, the learning settles even deeper for me. The beautiful thing about story is that it shows up for us as we are, when we are, and where we are in that moment. And that what this looks like will change as we change. So if I were to go back to listen to these episodes again in a year, what I have made meaning from will also have changed because I have changed. This is the power of story. It can transform us and will continue to transform us as we walk this life's journey. In this final episode, I ask you, what have you gathered as a result of your time with us In these episodes, learning about evaluation, Indigenous evaluation, Indigenous sovereignty through knowledge production, what have you learned about the hopes and the vision, about the challenges and the opportunities? What will you carry forward with you as a result of hearing these stories? There were so many times in the recording of these conversations that I wish I was sitting directly across from the table from the people who I was chatting with. I wish that the setting was a kitchen table with a beautiful patterned tablecloth with tea mugs and a hot pot of tea sitting in front of us. Some cookies that I would have baked and brought because I love to bake cookies, a throwover from the legacy of my mom and my grandma. I wish that at the end of these conversations, I could have gotten up and squeezed my conversational friends so tightly with all of the love and the joy and the gratitude that I have for the worlds that they opened up in this space and in this podcast. So I hope that one of the things that you have taken away is the ability to listen, to build a relationship, to gain insight into different experiences, to learn about the power of stories and the power of stories to transform. If you listen to them again and again, I hope that it felt like you were at this virtual kitchen table with us and wishing to actually be at the kitchen table with us, because I sure hope that's what it felt like. Last month, I had the honor of being invited to present at the closing plenary at the American Evaluation Association Conference in Indianapolis. The theme of the conference was called The Power of Story. And I shared a talk titled The Stories We Tell Matter, The Courage to Show Up. And let me tell you, I am calling on myself to have the courage to show up for sure. That was quite the experience. But clearly, this is something that I believe in, the power of story. And it's a principle that roots how I show up in my work, that stories hold power. The kinds of stories we tell, the ways we tell the stories, and who determines what stories are important are all key considerations when we think about the power of evaluation to work towards decolonial futures. Stories are relational methods. And in my work across Turtle Island, story has been a fundamental mechanism for me to lean into the roles and responsibilities I carry to be in good relations with those I'm walking alongside. There are many types of stories, ways of telling stories, and even more purposes that stories serve in our lives as community members and in society overall. Stories can be used to build community and to gain a deeper understanding of who we are and where we come from. In Indigenous evaluation, the use of story can come through in how we gather information about what it is we're evaluating, and gathering these stories can take many forms. Each of these types of stories build on and reinforce the other. The story that we tell ourselves and the story that we are told by others. The kinds of stories I reflect on when I think about what it might take to move us towards decolonial futures are the higher level stories that are told about the world we live in. The stories we hear, repeat, and integrate can reinforce or they can make visible the absurdity of the social narratives in our countries. The stories that stick onto our bones, whether we know it or not. Sounds like a lot of power for something as simple as a story. However, it's not really simple when we understand the way that stories build a scaffolding, layered one on top of another until they become the bricks that are building an almost immutable structure. This understanding helps to make visible the power of singular and collective stories, and why the kinds of stories that we tell matter for the generations to come. Stories have the power to influence health and wellness. They have the ability to transform our futures. These stories contrast the other scaffolded stories that have been allowed to set into concrete, the stories that have forged systems such as education and social work. And so what must we do? What can we do? This is a big leap and impetus for how I show up in my work in general and the work of Indigenous evaluation specifically. I believe that we can shift. I believe that if we can shift how we are in relation with stories that are other than what has been normalized, socialized, and consumed, that we can transform how we relate to one another. And this transformation as Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples is long overdue. Being in spaces where we can hear and build relations with new or old stories will help us to transform how we understand the relationships and accountabilities we must hold with all of our relations, because we need to imagine new futures. And this isn't possible with the stories that are normalized as truth right now. We need to breathe life into futures that transform the gritty realities of colonial violence and stark inequities that allow our lives to be swept aside. Stories of who we are and where we come from help us to see the responsibilities that we hold, the stories we tell, the ones we are invited into, and even more starkly, the stories that we refuse to engage with are powerful acts of resistance. So what happens when someone else defines our stories? What happens when eyes that observe the story see a vision of the world painted in colors unfamiliar and incongruent to what is being experienced? What if those eyes don't have a context through worldview, language, or relations for what they're seeing in front of them? It can start to feel like a bad game of telephone. You know, the game where the one child starts off saying a phrase and it's passed from one ear to another, sometimes innocently transforming, and sometimes a kid in the group decides to throw a wrench in the production, offering something inappropriate into the circle. But what emerges on the other end is a completely turned around statement. In evaluation or research with Indigenous peoples and communities, this is not such an innocent turnaround. It's not so innocuous of an ending. When the findings are tallied, reports are written, and presentations are made, if these stories are told in a way that erases the complexities and nuances of experience and context, whether intentionally or not, it is harmful. Carrying on as things have always been done adds another brick to the scaffolding that we are trying to tear down. So, in Indigenous evaluation and other knowledge production activities, what are the stories that need to be told and who needs to be telling them? And just as I began this season by sharing why this work is important to me, why this podcast is so important to me, I'm leaving you with a little bit more of a glimpse into the why of my work, the spirit that I carry to do this work. And as author and scholar Thomas King says, don't say in the years to come that you would have lived your life differently if only you had heard this story. You've heard it now. Okay, let's get back to this whole poetry sense-making thing that I talked about at the beginning of the episode. I'm actually going to invite you into a creation space for a moment where you are. In this moment of time, I'd like to invite you to channel some creative and poetic energy, because we actually all hold this ability within all of us, the ability to share and to express ourselves in a way that is beautiful, that might be called poetry. And so I'd like to invite you to take a moment to ground yourself in whatever way feels good. You could take a deep breath, inhaling and exhaling a few times. You could feel the ground supporting you, whether it's your feet or your sits bones, or whether you're lying on your back and listening to this podcast in the most beautiful relaxation state already. If you're driving, do this part when you get home. Whatever position you're in right now, take a moment to connect with who you are and where you are, and to center within yourself. Once you've done that, I invite you to reflect on these questions. It'd be a great idea for you to have a paper and a pen beside you, or you can pause and go and get that stuff and come back to these questions. So after you have finished all of the podcast episodes, I ask you to think about these questions. What were you hoping for? What were you expecting to find? Were you looking for new education, new experiences? Were you looking for someone who understood what it was like to do the work that you do? Were you trying to understand or to find out how you could support an ongoing effort towards Indigenous resurgence? Were you curious? Are you an evaluator and this area is completely new to you? Wherever you're showing up from, what were you hoping for? Jot a few notes down and brainstorm for a moment. Pause me now and take a few moments for this section. Now I'd like you to think about what stands out for you. What are those aha threads that keep stitching together for you as you listen to the episodes? What are the things that challenge you? What are the questions that come up for you? What are the moments that felt like a big exhale for you? Reflect on those questions and write down some sentences. Brainstorm words, phrases, thoughts, emotions. Get it all down on your piece of paper. It doesn't have to be pretty. Pause me now and take a few minutes for this section. And finally, I'll ask you this last set of questions. What do you hope happens as a result of your time listening to these episodes? What do you wish for those who will listen after you? What words would you like to share for the guests that I had within these episodes? Pause me now and take a few minutes for this section. Okay, now you should have a bunch of words, phrases, thoughts, exclamation marks, emojis. I'm not sure what you have all over your paper right now, but there should be something, or it's sitting in your brain and you're going to come back to this and do it again later. So I'd like you to take another minute. And in that minute, I'd like you to think about how you would use what's on your paper to answer this question. And this question is, 1 year from now, what would you like to have taken with you because of listening to all of these episodes? Speak to your future self. So take a few moments, think about that question, and circle, underline, draw stars beside everything that you've brainstormed that resonates for you on your brainstorming page to answer that question. Pause me now and take a few minutes for this section. And now, take what you've circled and underlined and starred and rearranged the words. Create a 5-line stanza that brings all of the pieces that are in front of you into an answer to that question. The question is, 1 year from now, what would you like to have taken with you because of listening to all of these episodes? So you're going to build this 5-line stanza and you're going to draft that onto the page in front of you. Feel the flow of the words onto the page. Don't overthink it. Pause me now and take a few minutes for this section. Now, read through what you have written, what you've scribed onto the page in front of you. What else do you want to add? Are there questions that are coming up for you? I invite you to find on the brainstorm page again another 5-line stanza that continues this conversation that you're having with your future self, to invite them into a space that takes and builds a relationship with what has been offered in the opening of these bundles. Pause me now and take a few minutes for this last section. All right. So in that time, we have reflected on what we've gathered. We have reflected on the questions we're carrying forward. And now I'd like you to take a moment and acknowledge and read out loud the poem that you've created. You can pause me and read your poem aloud to yourself. When you're reading out loud, think, is there something missing? What might I like to add or adjust? Take a few minutes here to make those adjustments. We have 2 stanzas that are sitting in front of you, and those are yours. They are marked. They are a witness to the journey that we have taken together. And so, if you have a little bit more creative juice in front of you, I'd like to offer you the opportunity to add a title. It can be anything. It can be a question. It can be a word. Add a title and add your name and the date to the bottom of your poem. If you are as calendar-driven as I am, everything needs to be in that calendar for me, you might even add a note to look back at the poem. In 3 months, 6 months, at the end of the season 2 podcast, the possibilities are all yours. I hope that this creative journey has offered you an opportunity to reflect on what has not only been a journey that I hope took place in your mind, but potentially has been a journey that also took place for you in your heart, in your spirit, in your body, in your emotions, and all of those other aspects that make you who you are. I hope that this journey has felt nourishing in many different ways, and I hope that by creating this poem, you can see the opportunity that you've gifted yourself by taking the time to listen in. If by any chance you feel pulled to share these poems with me, I would be so thrilled. In fact, I'm inviting you to become a part of my Indigenous Insights Season 2 by sharing these poems with me. I'd love in the upcoming episodes to be able to witness the growth and the learning and the gifts that you share through your poems. And so, if you click on my website, click on Contact Me, you can share your poem and your contact information through there, or you can email me, indigenousevaluationpodcast@gmail.com, and I will let you know that I've received it safe and well. Now, as we close off the time together, I'm going to share my poem with you. I pause, take a deep breath, feel my feet on the ground, my heartbeat in my chest. I am grateful, Kenanaskimotin. For my spirit is nourished. From the generosity of the good medicine shared in these stories, we are doing this work by love. I am grateful, Kenanaskimotin. For the time, the care, the joy, the laughter, and the calls for action, this is values-based work, heart-centered work, spirit-grounded work, wrapped in blankets of buffalo hide. We are doing this work for love. I hear the calls to show up, be good aunties, be in kinship, be good ally and accomplice. What is the legacy we will leave? No more data mining for bums in seats. Leave your outside experts at home. We are doing this work with love. Embody the stories, collective, responsive, iterative. Carry them with the reverence they deserve. This is our accountability. We are doing this work by, with, and for love, because the stories we tell matter, and it's time to tell new stories. Ego se, for listening and for being a part of this journey together. And for now, this is me signing off until we meet again. Watch for season 2 launching in spring 2024, and I wish you all very well until that time. Take good care. Bye for now. I'm so glad you spent time with us today. I have a few notes to wrap up this episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on your favorite streaming service, including Podbean, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, so that you don't miss an episode. Also, this podcast is self-supported, and I'm hoping to make the work more sustainable. So, if you're finding the content interesting and valuable, please consider supporting Indigenous Insights through Buy Me a Coffee. You can find the link in the show notes. Finally, I would like to extend an invitation. If you are someone who has an interest in Indigenous evaluation and would like to have a conversation on this podcast, I would love to hear from you. Please send me a note and we can connect about your work, what you're learning, and the questions you're thinking about. That's it for this week. I look forward to sharing this space with you again soon. Ego se.